Saturday night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Good evening, Indianapolis. I'm your host, the antiquarian curmudgeon and the man of many hats, Ethan Hatcher. Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Saturday Night on The Circle. Still coming down from the highs of a night with WIBC, I had so much fun getting to know the listeners like Scott and Jennifer and be part of the roundtable with Tony and the other hosts of our station. Great times were had by all, and I hope you were part of the more than 400 who came out to see the show. Packed the house. It was a great time. Of course, being a week and a half away from Election Day, midterms were a top ticket item for discussion, and we covered the hesitance that many still feel supporting third parties in spite of the atrocious offerings by the duopoly establishment for office. And here to make the case for why a third party vote is not a wasted exercise and handicap the midterms in our state and across the nation is the suave and winsome wordsmith and powerful personality voicing his disdain for nonsense and ineptitude in office. You know him and love him. He is the Rob Kendall from Kendall and Casey Show. Thanks for joining me again, Rob.
Follow you around and have you do that whenever I come into a room. Would you be willing to do that?
I could be the hype man like Kyle Wells. Yeah. I mean, since he is now promoted out of the station, there is now room for a hype man here at WIBC.
Well, you know, there's a certain sophistication in your voice when you do those intros. So Kyle's just a big, loud hype man, but I think you would walk into a room with that, we would get some things accomplished.
I tried to put a little bit of effort into the intro.
No, it's great.
All right. That said, Rob, okay, so we were talking midterms, and we can talk Fetterman, we can talk the Indiana Senate race, we can talk the, of course, very important Secretary of State race. Where do you want to start?
Well, why don't we start with the Secretary of State's race, because that is
the most
important thing on the ballot this fall, and you know they taught you this in broadcasting school, Ethan. You always lead with the big thing.
Yeah. It is so vitally important for holding the Republicans accountable in office, I think, is an issue that you've hit on multiple times. By getting Jeff Maurer across the 10% threshold, that gets libertarians primary ballot access and gives them a huge boost to be able to act as a referendum on either party. And that is such an important issue, regardless of whoever ultimately wins. And it's not going to be Jeff Maurer. It's going to be, Diego Morales or Destiny Wells. But it is vitally important that we get him across the 10% threshold. However, so many seem to be hesitant continuously to support the third party, and that I find to be absolutely insane, especially with the incredible inadequacy of Diego Morales, who apparently has manufactured aspects of his business career. He has very spurious allegations against him in his personal life, as well as potentially manufacturing aspects of his military career. Like, this guy is bad on many levels, but there still seems to be like, oh, well, we got to support him or else Destiny Wells is going to win. I'm tired of hearing that argument, Rob.
Yeah, one of the things I wish is that the average person could see how much disdain, and I really saw this when I worked in state government and was around these people, how much disdain the establishment wing of the Republican Party has for actual conservatives, right? Because as you mentioned, so many of these people know what a bad candidate Diego Morales is.
I saw it in action, and I texted you about this when I was at an event. It totally by coincidence, I came to an event for Grabowski and Carrasco, and there was Diego Morales. I didn't even recognize him until we were at the buffet line, and he like reaches across the table as I'm getting a slice of pizza, and he's like, oh, I need to shake your hand. I'm Diego Morales, and I'm running for Secretary of State. I'm like, you're kidding. I didn't even know what to say because I just legitimately did not even expect to see him there. And of course, he had no idea who I was. And as soon as I'd announced that I was a host with WIBC and a friend of Abdul Shabazz, I mean, that guy couldn't get out of the room fast enough, which was obscene after he gave his little pitch of how important it was for, you know, you to vote a straight ticket Republican, which is, you know, a stinker of a proposition.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. So, basically what it is, this is why I wish people could understand conservatives, how much the Republican Party actually loathes conservatives and just uses you for your vote, because there seems some sense of obligation by conservatives that no matter what crap candidate the Republicans throw at them, well, we must vote for them because we can't get a Democrat in there. And here is what's at stake, okay? If you actually are a person who is actually tired of the Republicans the past 5 years. So what is the Republican Party the past 5 years in Indiana? It's massive tax increases. It's massive government. It's massive growth of government. It's lockdowns. It's mask mandates. It is these are the things the Republicans have either done or not stopped the governor from doing.
These basically sound like anti-Republican issues. It's no similar as if there were Democrats. It's
if you are truly tired of that, you have really one shot to correct this, and it is on the Secretary of State's race this fall. Ethan, you are honest with your audience. I am honest with my audience. We would be lying to our audience if we sat here and said, we want you to vote for Jeff Maurer because we believe Jeff Maurer is going to win. We do not believe that. But winning for Jeff Maurer is not getting the most votes. Winning for Jeff Maurer and the Libertarians is getting a measly 10% of the vote. Because right. if he gets 10% of the vote, the Libertarians now become a primary ballot access party. Right now, they are a party who you do not vote for Libertarians in a primary. They do not have any access to the public resources that the Republicans and Democrats do. They are they nominated a private convention, and you don't see them till the general. If the Libertarians get 10% and get primary ballot access, it is millions of dollars every year in free publicity that the Republicans and Democrats already get, and it is access to voter information, which will help them identify candidates in order to get people to vote for them in the fall. If you're a person who always says, well, yeah, I like a lot of the Libertarian stuff, but man, they just got to poll better. I like a lot of the Libertarian stuff, but they can't win. This is your opportunity to correct the situation. One time, one vote. If you are a person who fears the Democrats taking over the Congress and you got a mental pretzel yourself into Todd Young, okay. But there's nothing to fear here. The Democrat Secretary of State candidate, if by some chance she won, doesn't set policy. She's not a lawmaker. Her job is to enact the will of the legislature. And if she wins, Republicans might actually have to act like Republicans and have somebody to fight with. There's no downside to voting for Jeff Maurer. You accomplish so much by doing it.
And if you are one of these pearl clutchers about a Democrat potentially winning office, getting Maurer across the 10% threshold does not preclude Diego Morales from ultimately limping to victory, because this is still an incredibly deeply red Republican state, and there are still going to be droves of people who straight ticket vote for Republicans, and Diego can still well pull out victory while also attaining the much more important victory of granting Libertarians ballot access by getting Maurer across the 10% threshold. That is the winning point.
And I don't want to speak for you, but I think you share a lot of these sentiments. Look, we always hear, well, Libertarians, you know, they're booger eaters and dungeon dwellers and whatever. If you put the three resumes and just looked at the person applying for Secretary of State, Libertarian Jeff Maurer, Republican Diego Morales, Democrat Destiny Wells, and you were hiring them for a job, which is this is basically what this is for it, for your company, you would almost every time hire Jeff Maurer.
Absolutely.
And so this is the best candidate. We always say Libertarians need to nominate better candidates. You're not going to do any better than Jeff. He's got a great resume. He's well-spoken. He's professional. He's everything people have professed to want from the Libertarian Party.
And he's also better by comparison, direct comparison.
Absolutely.
For the office in question.
And again, I don't want to speak for you on this. I'm not cheerleading for Jeff Maurer because I'm a Libertarian. I'm cheerleading for Jeff Maurer because I'm tired of Republicans not being held accountable for the things they've promised to do. And the best way to hold Republicans accountable is to get this Libertarian across 10% voting threshold.
Three headline issues that I grew up with understanding the Republican Party to represent and that I wish they would return to: individual liberty, small government, low taxation. Those were the three planks. And I just wish we would return to the core conservative issues. That's kind of why I got invested in voting for the Republican Party.
Diego Morales, and I've been following Indiana politics, I've been voting for 20 years. And I didn't always follow it as closely as I do now, but I knew what was going on as a Republican. I always get labeled as the voice of the Libertarians. It may astonish some people. I'm still
voice of accountability, my friend.
I'm a Republican in good standing.
Right.
I always vote in Republican primaries. Diego Morales is the worst statewide candidate the Republicans have run in the 20 years I've been following this, and it's not even close. And yes, that includes Charlie White and Richard Murdoch. The level of bad of Diego Morales as a candidate, if you vote for Diego, you are telling the Republican Party, and they believe this now anyway, that no matter what crap candidate we throw at you, you will vote for it because you can't do any worse than Diego Morales.
Now, Rob, I have loved the conversation that we've had so far, but we haven't even gotten to the Indiana Senate race or the entire debacle that is Oz versus Fetterman, yeah. And I really want to cover that. Can you stick around for another segment?
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks for listening. This is Saturday Night on the Circle. Check my podcast at saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm and stay tuned to 93 WIBC. We're coming back with Rob Kendall up next. I am he as you are he as you are.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Check my podcast at saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm. Rob Kendall is live with us in studio, and the topic for discussion is midterm elections. We're now less than a week and a half away, which is incredible. Tuesday, November 8th, the big day. And Rob, we haven't even gotten into the debacle that is the Pennsylvania race between Fetterman and Oz, and of course our own Indiana Senate race between McDermott, Siniak, and Todd Young, Duke of Spendingburg.
Yes, the old Duke, yes.
Let's begin with Pennsylvania, and then we'll return to local issues since we got done talking about the Secretary of State race in the last segment. Man, my goodness. I watched the Fetterman-Oz debate after it aired. I did not get to watch it live, but I did watch the full thing. And what they did to that man is absolutely criminal. And the expectation in any capacity that he is able to fulfill the duties as required in office is obscene. It's not, it's just, it, he has no capacity to hold a coherent thought or make a cogent issue. I mean, he leaned on that crutch. What was it? The Oz rule.
Yes.
I think he kept leaning on, but it didn't even make sense. A lot of the things that he said, and we're going to play some of those sound bites later in the show. It was sad.
Well, here is the scariest part about this, Ethan, is
it's still close, isn't
it? Right. Probably no matter what happens, 48% of the populace is going to vote for John Fetterman, maybe more. Look, Oz is a zero as a candidate. I understand
right.
that.
Right. So even if he wins, is that a victory? Because he doesn't strike me especially as a fiscal conservative, which is a top priority issue after we've spent trillions of dollars and are reeling from the effects of the hyperinflation.
Now, that being said, and I talked about this on the air, it's my understanding there is a Libertarian running in Pennsylvania. He was not, or she was not, included in the debate. So I am talking from a point of ignorance here.
Same.
That as a split ticket voter, I try to vote for the best person. It could be the Libertarian is overwhelmingly the best person, and we would cast a vote for them. But not knowing that, I would absolutely, even knowing that Oz is a zero, cast a vote for Oz because Fetterman is a total lunatic. And I did this with Todd Young. I voted for Todd Young because I said, we'll give him a shot in 2016. We'll give him a shot. Obviously, it was a colossal failure. I thought maybe he would do the things that he said he was going to do. He didn't do much of it other than the judges. He was pretty good on the judges. But the point is, somebody hasn't failed you until they failed you. So maybe Oz would be a pleasant surprise. But no matter what, it ain't Fetterman, and Fetterman is a total, I mean, take away
now,
the stroke.
Right, notwithstanding the medical issues, his policy positions as they stood are not reprehensible. I mean, he's basically like the 1970s edition of Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Before he matriculated and came to the Senate.
Yes, he's
vintage Sanders. Yes. He's not modern Sanders.
Fetterman is more left than Bernie Sanders. Like, he would be like, dude, you need to stop being so conservative. So yes, I would absolutely, if I lived in Pennsylvania, again, not knowing the Libertarian, cast a vote for Oz. I wouldn't be thrilled to death with it, but
I mean, again, if you're just talking about direct comparison,
right,
and adequacy for office, you got to give to Oz by default in this case.
But let's talk about two.
Why do we give Republicans the default victory in that case? That sucks.
Well, I'm a split ticket voter. I mean,
sure.
It doesn't bother me. I'm going to do it again this year. I'm just saying that if we're comparing apples to apples,
right,
here, one guy entered the stage and said hello, good night, and it was 50-50 whether he would form complete sentences. So Dr. Oz, I guess by default, is the winner,
is the candidate of choice. Now let's get into the Indiana, of course, Senate race. And again, it seems like we get the Republican by default because we absolutely cannot have Tim McDermott. And of course, James Siniak did not have an overwhelmingly powerful performance at the debate, and he wasted a great opportunity to drop the Duke of Spendingburg line, which he then burned on Fox Business.
He
it was good.
He told me later, and I'm just going to say
it was good.
You're right, I should have done it. And you should have, James. These libertarians never listen to me, right? Like, we told Rainwater in 2020, we were like, dude, you got to call him Lockdown McGee, he being Holcomb, in your opening statement. Because here's the thing. These guys are clowns anyway. And I'm saying Holcomb's a clown, Todd Young's a clown. I was taught, Ethan, you should treat the politician the way they treat the taxpayer. So these libertarians, whether it's Rainwater or in the other case, James Siniak, they get in there and they're so worried about, oh my gosh, people are going to think I'm unprofessional. People already have a bad opinion of libertarians. What would people have been talking about in 2020 out of the debate or the other night in the U.S. Senate debate? Oh my gosh, Duke of Spendingburg.
Also, despite my own issues with that, there also seems to be this public enamor with that persona. Look at how well Trump did. I said that he didn't have, you know, he wasn't fit for office because of his, you know, personality displays. But man, that really sold in 2016. People liked that because they said that's the guy that's going to fight and he's going to stick it to the libs.
You need, as a libertarian, as much earned media as you can possibly get.
Sure.
Earned media is free coverage of you.
And Trump was the king of that in 2016.
And had he called him Lockdown McGee, had Rainwater called Holcomb Lockdown McGee in 2020, or Siniak called Todd Young the Duke of Spendingburg in 2022, that would have been the story. James Siniak, libertarian. He did not rise to the occasion. But let's never miss an opportunity, whether Siniak rose to the occasion or not, to remind people of how abhorrent Todd Young is. We had a caller call in to Friday and did the math on this. Well, he did a little bit of math for us, and we did the math then on top of that. So if you to put in perspective, Todd Young has added $11 trillion to our national debt in 6 years. He told me at the Stacks Pancake House in Plainfield, in a room full of people, he's not stopping. He regretted none of his spending. He'll do it all again the next 6 years. But just in the past 6 years, $11 trillion. Well, how much is that? We spend so much money now, people lose track. If you took a $1,000 bill, okay, a $1,000 bill, and you tightly packed them across this country.
So like a banknote,
right?
Not $100 bill, $1,000 bill.
$1,000 bill,
okay.
And you tightly pack them, like one next to the next one, over and over and over again. You would get all the way to the far end, Ethan, of Wichita, Kansas.
Leaving from here?
Yes. From Indianapolis to Wichita, Kansas, of $1,000 bills. That is how much money, not just the Todd Young has spent, he has added to the national debt. So he spent all the other money, which is our actual revenue that comes to the Treasury, and he blew past that by $1,000 bills from here, from Indianapolis, to the far end of Wichita, Kansas.
Can we sustain that? Because if that gets us to Kansas, then another term of Todd Young gets us all the way from here to California.
Yes.
And that drives us literally and metaphorically to the left coast as far as policy. And that's why I'm dismayed with Republicans. Again, going back to what I said, I believe, in the last segment, what I grew up with and what I was so, you know, rah-rah about in 2010 when the Tea Party conservatives came to power. And that's when I was but a young man listening to WIBC.
Yes.
And go, oh, good, you know, rah-rah-rah. Yep. Tea Party Republicans, this is going to be awesome. They're going to come in. They're going to cut government. It's going to be small government. And it didn't happen.
Right.
And in the entire decade that they were given generous support by the American people, they never even managed to achieve their premier issue of overturning the Affordable Care Act, which we're still saddled with and I dare say will be forever. It's not going away at this point. I made that prediction a couple years ago, and unfortunately, it seems that I was right.
Yeah, no, the Republican Party, the National Republican Party, is a party of two things. One, they're the party of big government. I mean, you think about, you can say whatever you want about Biden and the spending, and you're absolutely right. It's terrible. It's atrocious. The Republicans, when they had the presidency and the Senate in 2020, added $5 trillion, or more than that, but $5 trillion in just the COVID stuff alone to the national debt. If the Democrats do that, we lose our minds. Why don't we do that when it's the Republicans? They're also the party of pathological lying, which you just touched on. Remember in 2010, give us the House, we'll defund Obamacare. We gave them the House that didn't defund Obamacare. Well, we needed the Senate. We gave them the Senate in 2014. Well, we're just a presidency short. We gave them the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and they didn't defund Obamacare. Why? Because Republicans, just like Democrats, love to participate in legalized vote buying. They love to buy people's votes.
We should do the math sometime. How many World War IIs could you win for $5 trillion?
It is. And I know a lot of people, because they're so afraid of Schumer and the Democrats, are going to mental pretzel themselves into voting for Todd Young. But you have to mirror, I call this mirror yourself, which is hold the mirror up and realize what you're voting for, which is you are voting for a guy who will never stop adding to the national debt, which is the primary driver of inflation. Todd Young is the problem, the same way Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are the problem. They're the same guy.
I have an answer to the question, Rob.
Yes.
You could win more than 10 World War IIs with $5 trillion.
And the worst part about Todd Young, and I would in a weird way have respect for him if he'd come out and said, you know what, I do it, but it's necessary and I don't feel bad at all about it and inflation's fine, it's a necessary evil. He's running ads, he's doing the talk show circuit, he's doing all this stuff lamenting inflation and government spending. He's gaslighting you.
He's
a
hypocrite.
Why would you vote for somebody who is gaslighting you right to your face?
But unfortunately, James Cineag's performance at the debate was lackluster, and people are afraid of Tom McDermott because they don't want on-demand abortion in the state of Indiana and some of the other assorted nonsense that he's spouted on the campaign
trail. I know we got to go, but here's the trade that I propose to your audience if they're absolutely upset, have to mental pretzel themselves into voting for Todd Young. Get even with that terrible vote by also voting for Jeff Moore in the Secretary of State's race. If that's the trade and you say, I don't want Rob to be disappointed in me, I guess I will accept a Young Moore ticket this year.
We've come full circle. Get Moore across the 10% threshold. Let's do the Libertarian Party a favor. Give them primary ballot access and hold the Republican Party and the duopoly establishment to account.
You're doing a phenomenal job. I love your show. You have come so far as a broadcaster. You do a great job when you fill in for Tony, and I'm really proud of you, man.
Thanks, man. It's a pleasure to be part of the WIBC crew, and it was great to be on the stage there at night with WIBC. Stay tuned. This is Saturday Night on The Circle.
I'm a loser. I'm a loser. And I'm not what I appear to be.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on The Circle, where tonight I'll be recapping the highlights, or perhaps more aptly, the lowlights from the Pennsylvania Senate debate, where an abysmal performance by the Democratic candidate has only modestly blunted his campaign against Mehmet Oz, his Republican adversary. Will his performance be enough to seal the deal for Pennsylvanians' support for the Republican candidate? Only time will tell. And in the meantime, I'll play selections from the debate, plus bonus sound from the president gaffing his way across the administration, and CNN reporting on Chucky Schmucky Schumer offering dire midterm predictions for Democrats. You'll hear it all for this week's edition of Hat Tricks with Hatcher.
It's time for another one of Hatcher's Hat Tricks.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC. Producer Carl on the board, and I'm your humble host, Ethan Hatcher. Thanks for listening. We begin this week with the Pennsylvania senatorial debate between Republican Mehmet Oz and Democrat John Fetterman, who, my goodness, performed abysmally. If there were any doubts or contention about his capability for performing and discharging the duties of office, I think those were put to bed, and not in a good way for the Democratic candidate. This was how he began the debate, to give you an inkling into how bad things went from there.
With that, let's get started. Mr. Fetterman, we're going to begin with you. Your political experience includes serving as the mayor of Braddock, a small borough near Pittsburgh, and one term as lieutenant governor. You're running for a seat that could decide the balance of power in Washington. What qualifies you to be a U.S. senator? You have 60 seconds.
Hi. Good night, everybody.
Oh, my goodness. That was how the debate began, and honestly, things did not improve from that point on. It was more than just minor gaffes. He seemed more often than not to lose track of the conversation and be incapable of providing coherent answers to the questions posed on multiple occasions, these being some of the most prominent examples, but they were sprinkled throughout the entirety of the debate if you watched it.
Continuing with you, Mr. Fetterman, your opponent has criticized Democratic spending, as you heard. Has the Biden administration overspent? And if so, where do you think spending should be cut? You have 60 seconds.
Question: where do you think spending should be cut? Let's see how the candidate answers the question, or if he answers the question indeed.
No, here's what I think we have to fight about inflation here right now. That's what we need to fight about inflation, you know, right now, because it's a tax on working families, you know. And Dr. Oz can't possibly understand what that is like. You know, he has 10 gigantic mansions. You know, we must push back against corporate greed. We must make sure that we're also pushing back against price gouging as well, too. You know, we also be able to make more in Pennsylvania and make more in America. When he had a choice to make his merchandise, the Oz label is on, he made it all in China. You know, who can you believe that can fight against inflation and pushing back against corporate greed or somebody that has chosen working in China versus over American workers?
Okay, so the question as posed was, where do you think spending should be cut? And the answer as given was, here's what I think we need to fight about inflation right now. That's what we need to fight about inflation. And of course, some meandering response about corporate greed. So he didn't actually ever answer the question. And this was a repeated theme. He liked to lean on what he said was the Oz rule of deception itself, a ridiculous line he blundered many a time, but also proved himself incapable of answering his past opposition to fracking, and here's how he bumbled his way through that response.
You have made two conflicting statements regarding fracking. In a 2018 interview, you said, quote, "I don't support fracking at all. I never have." But earlier this month, you told an interviewer, quote, "I support fracking. I support the energy independence that we should have here in the United States." So, Mr. Fetterman, please explain your changing position. 60 seconds.
I've always supported fracking, and I always believe that independence with our energy is critical, and we can't be held, ransom to somebody like Russia. You know, I've always believed that energy independence is critical, and I've always believed that, and I do support fracking. I've never taken any money from their industry, but I support how critical it is that we produce our own energy and create energy independence.
I must correct the record.
Just a second, Mr. Oz. I do want to clarify something. You're saying tonight that you support fracking, that you've always supported fracking, but there is that 2018 interview that you said, quote, "I don't support fracking at all." So how do you square the two?
I do support fracking, and I don't.
Oh, my goodness.
I support fracking, and I stand, and I do support fracking.
Okay.
Okay, kudos to the moderator for actually pushing back on that meandering non-answer. Nevertheless, he still didn't provide an adequate answer to the question, and this seems to be disenchanting Pennsylvania independents who could make the difference between a Fetterman or Oz victory if this Fox News caller is to be believed, self-identifying as an independent voter from the region and saying he's not voting Fetterman.
I'm going to definitely vote for Oz. There's no doubt about that. How anybody can watch that race and select Fetterman is beyond me. It is beyond me. But for those people who are listening and are going, "Oh my God, he's a redneck from Pennsylvania." Until 2012, I was 11 for 11. I'm a registered independent, by the way. 11 for 11 in presidential elections. So that meant I voted for Jimmy Carter and Slick Willie twice and Barack Obama when he ran against a guy who was a POW when I was in Vietnam. So,
I mean, think about that. If you are disenchanting a guy who voted for Carter, Clinton, and Obama, you must be a truly terrible candidate. Let that sink in. You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Catch my podcast at saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm. Before I close out the segment, medically frail candidates are not restricted to the state of Pennsylvania. Most prominently, our president himself, the gaffomatic Joe Biden, continues to make mistakes across the administration. Most noticeably, recently referring to the vice president once again as president of the United States in a baffling gaffe.
"Happy birthday, great president. We know your mom's always with you."
Not the first time he's done that. He also seems to have lost track of how many states are in the union.
And by the way, if they do, that means, not a joke, everybody, that's why we were defeated in 2018 when they tried to do it. We went to 54 states.
54 states. How interesting that they seem to have lost three states since President Barack Obama visited. 57. And then finally, closing off this segment, I wanted to play Chuck Schumer caught on a hot mic offering dire predictions for the midterm election cycle, because it seems neither party is offering particularly compelling candidates. But in the face of enormous pressures from inflation, a collapsing economy, and other issues, it seems Democrats are on the way out, as recognized by Schumer, who seems to think that Georgia is going red this time around.
Good morning. President Biden and former President Obama are hitting the campaign trail for Democrats with less than 2 weeks until midterms. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris will be in Philadelphia stumping for John Fetterman and also Josh Shapiro. And Obama will rally for Reverend Raphael Warnock and Stacey Abrams in Atlanta, Georgia. That is where, of course, Democrats are really starting to worry. Even Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer caught offering a bleak outlook on a hot mic.
So you know the situation is dire when they're not even sending the current president out on the campaign trail. They're sending the last guy out to stump for your Democratic candidates. That's sad. You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle, 93 WIBC. Stay tuned, because coming up next, we've got a couple updates on Indiana crime, arrest made in the Delphi murders. Hopefully some closure with that investigation, as well as a young child found in a suitcase this last April has been identified. And we'll give you more details coming up next on Saturday Night on the Circle.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC. If your time to
you is worth it. Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Producer Carl working hard on the board as always. Rounding out the hour, we finally seem to have closure on two tragic cases here in the state of Indiana. And although ultimately this doesn't remedy the sad outcome of these cases, hopefully it provides a small modicum of relief to the family members left behind. We begin with the child found dead in a suitcase in rural Washington County in April of this year. He's been identified as 5-year-old Kyle Amar Jordan of Atlanta, Georgia. The investigators ultimately ruling that he died of dehydration, severe electrolyte loss. Two suspects identified in connection with the crime by Indiana State Police, and felony warrants issued for both. One for Dawn Elaine Coleman of Shreveport, Louisiana, and another for DeJuan Ludi Anderson of Atlanta, Georgia, according to Sergeant Kerry Hulls with the Indiana State Police. DeJuan Anderson, she's the mother of Cairo Jordan. She's wanted for murder. Indiana State Police looked for her in the Echo Park area of Los Angeles in the past week, but they've been unable to find her, and evidently she is on the move. Hulls said she's been spotted in Houston, Las Vegas, and San Diego since the investigation began. Charges against them are neglect of a dependent resulting in death, a level 1 felony, as well as obstruction of justice, a level 6 felony. Hull said lead detective Matt Busick with the Washington County Sheriff's Department traveled to San Francisco, California, where Coleman was found and arrested, and she's going to be extradited back to Indiana within 30 days. The dedication shown by police officers in this investigation, bringing a timely conclusion to it, should be praised. Coming up with two suspects and identifying the body, hopefully providing closure for family members. That is sadly an outcome not seen often enough when it comes to criminal investigations. Also, the international mystery surrounding the deaths of teenage girls Abby Williams and Libby German from Delphi, Indiana in 2017 may finally be coming to a close. Someone has been confirmed to be arrested in connection with the case on Friday morning when they appeared in court. Indiana State Police are planning to provide an update on Monday, and that announcement is set to take place at 10 a.m. at Delphi United Methodist Church. Evidence released publicly since the Libby and Abby murders remains really minimal. The key evidence in the case is a video that was taken by Libby, likely in the moments before her death, where the suspect can be seen in grainy footage. Indiana State Police have interviewed, since the investigation began, hundreds of people, from possible witnesses and persons of interest to anyone who may have had information about suspicious activity on the day that the girls went missing. And more than 50,000 tips have been called in or emailed to investigator during the past 5 years. It was Richard Allen who was booked and jailed Friday in connection to the 2017 murders, and although it has yet to be revealed why, we have a clue offered by Kelsey German, Libby's sister, who tweeted on Friday, "Today's the day." And I can only hope, for the sake of that family, they finally have closure after murders who've consumed the entire community, as well as investigators across the state and internationally. I hope finally we can put this issue to bed and catch the bastard who did it. You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle, 93 WIBC. Catch my podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm, and stay tuned for more. Coming up in the next hour, I'm going to give you a recap of the fantastic night with WIBC. I enjoyed myself, and I hope you were one of the more than 400 guests who also were in attendance. And finally, I'll be closing out the hour with a conversation with the beloved Kyle Wells from Hammer and Nigel show, sharing the experiences he's gleaned over 12 years working with the WIBC family. It's a conversation you don't want to miss, so stay tuned. You are listening to Saturday Night on The Circle, and I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Stay tuned for more.
This is Ground Control.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back, Indianapolis. This is Saturday Night on The Circle, and I'm your eccentric yet lovable host, Ethan Hatcher. Thanks for joining me on 93 WIBC. This year was the third year running that we hosted a night with WIBC on Thursday, and as usual, it was an event not to be forgot. Despite doubling the capacity from the last 2 years at the Indiana Historical Society, we still packed the house with more than 400 of the best friends and listeners that radio hosts could ask for. Folks, you warmed our hearts and rocked our world. Without your support, what we do wouldn't mean diddly squat. So thanks for listening and giving local sponsors like Relay Indiana your continued patronage. So where to begin with last night? Again, first of all, the night really began with you. I enjoyed meeting listeners like Scott and also Jennifer, who came up to me and chatted a bit during the meet and greet before the show. It was lovely getting to chat and know that even on a lonely Saturday evening, I still have a few friends out in listener land tuning those dials into my show. And by the way, if you missed a moment, catch my podcast up at Saturday Night on the circle.fireside.fm. Last hour, I had my friend Rob Kendall on to talk about the Secretary of State and Senate races here as well as in Pennsylvania. And later in the hour, I've got Kyle Wells stopping in to bid us a farewells. So stay tuned for that. But first, recapping a night with WIBC, where to begin? It was a phenomenal evening. There's so much to talk about. It was my extreme honor and personal privilege to join the rest of the WIBC crew on stage as part of the roundtable discussion after the daytime hosts had finished with their presentations, which were all phenomenal. We got to watch Hammer and Nige working their magic on the stage, as well as breaking the news to the WIBC audience for the first time that beloved producer of the show, the Kyle Wells, is departing the WIBC family. Fortunately, he's leaving for greener pastures. He's going to be a wrestling hype man, living the dream he's always wanted. So we wish him nothing but the best in those endeavors. And stay tuned to this show, Saturday Night on The Circle, because Kyle is joining us in studio for a final time to share the memories he's gleaned over the last 12 years working for MS Communications and the WIBC radio family. We're looking forward to that, so stay tuned. Kendall and Casey were doing their thing, handicapping the midterm elections, making projections for the 2024 presidential election cycle, as well as talking profligate spending from Duke of Spendingburg himself, Senator Todd Young. It was a fantastic presentation that was begun by an unexpected display when Casey drove on stage in her motorcycle wearing a very foxy leather biker's jacket. That was an unexpected part of the presentation. And the illustrious Tony Katz was emceeing the event, demonstrating why he's
he's worthy of being a Marconi-nominated broadcasting talent. After erasing my drawing, which I'd spent nearly 5 hours working on, and I'll talk more about that in a minute, but he broke down a three-hour show in about a 10-minute segment after taking the topics live from the audience and building the show on stage. It was an incredible feat of broadcasting talent to watch, and speaking from personal experience, it takes an incredible amount of fortitude and intellectual capacity to be able to break down those topics, make intellectual commentary, and then seamlessly transition from topic to topic to topic like that, not only within one segment, but for 3 hours worth of conversation. It was something worthy of watching, and of course why Tony Katz was the MC of A Night with WIBC, so that was cool. Equally cool was the chance to put on public display, for the first time, mind you, one of my WIBC whiteboard drawings. Up to now, they've only been kept in studio, and you got to see it for the first time in person. I hope you liked it, and given the audible gasp from so many of the audience when Tony erased my more than 5 hours of hard work on the stage, I would say that you did, and a few of you also approached me before the show was underway to make mention of how much you enjoyed seeing the WIBC hosts brought into caricature form on the whiteboard. I appreciate your support. I was in on the gag ahead of time. I knew Tony was going to be erasing it, and I was fine with that because, look, as long as I've been doodling on whiteboards going back to college, many of those drawings have been erased with absolutely zero fanfare. So to get the chance to put it up on stage and then have the support from so many of you, it was really heartwarming to me because in the past, I've been a little self conscious about sharing my artwork with the public. Growing up, I was raised, as I mentioned, in a religious cult, and I got in trouble for some of the artistic expressions that I made growing up, and as a result, I was a little bit self-conscious about putting my work out for public critique and display, but I was glad to get the support from the WIBC audience, and y'all made me feel very appreciated and loved, and I liked that. Thank you. Finally, after all the presentations were done, we also watched a production put on by the WIBC digital team honoring the producers of WIBC. That was great. And then we ended the evening with a roundtable discussion of the weekend and daytime hosts of WIBC, and I joined everybody on stage, which was really cool. It felt like a high watermark in my broadcasting career after doing this weekend show for the last 3 years, finally getting to join the rest of the crew of WIBC on stage felt like a real victory. We talked about the issues facing Indiana and the nation, primarily midterm elections, as well as breaking down the hesitancy that many of the audience members still feel showing their support to third-party candidates. I think that hesitancy is misplaced, especially when we have inordinately qualified contenders like Jeff Maurer for the Secretary of State race, but it was just great getting to be on stage and expressing those ideas in front of you and breaking down why many still feel hesitant showing their support for third parties, especially when the stakes have been so elevated by the insanity of the Democrat Party, particularly in tanking the economy, as well as their ridiculous social agenda and green dream pie in the sky expectations that are killing energy production here in the country. It's understandable why so many of you would be fearful of potentially throwing away a vote that would ensure Democrat victories. But unfortunately, there's very little difference when you're dealing with a Republican Party that's willing to engage in more than $11 trillion worth of spending, $5 trillion of that spending added during the 2020 pandemic alone. So yes, profligate spending is not just the province of the Democrat Party. And I remember a time when Republicans represented the planks of limited government, low taxation, and individual liberty. Unfortunately, it seems as though they have strayed from those core tenets. So that was A Night with WIBC. I hope you were one of the more than 400 audience members who showed up to the Schrott Center at Butler University. But if not, there's always next year. Don't miss out on A Night with WIBC. It was a great show, and I hope to be a part of the program for next year's show as well. Stick around. You might even get to see more of my famous WIBC whiteboard drawings. Coming up next on Saturday night on The Circle, we're going to talk about how Biden has gaslit the public once again. again. Remember that pardon of more than 6,000 minor possessors of marijuana that Biden had publicly announced? Well, turns out he hasn't made good on those promises. And I'll give you the details more coming up next. So stay tuned. This is 93 WIBC. Thanks for listening. Catch my podcast at saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm. This is Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Stay tuned for more.
Who's the slimiest rat in the pack? Who's unlovable?
You.
Who's unlivable?
You.
Whose behavior is quite unforgivable?
You.
Who would stoop to the lowest and meanest of tricks in the book?
Tricks in the book!
Slime.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle, ladies and gentlemen. To the surprise of basically no one, it seems our illustrious executive, President Joe Biden, has deceived the American public regarding the scope and scale of the more than 10,000 pardons he'd offered to simple possessors of marijuana. Turns out they haven't released a single prisoner from federal custody because of the 10,000 or so individuals affected, none of them were still incarcerated. So that is an incredible deception foisted on the American public that Biden has participated in. And this was drawn to our attention due to a protest that was held at the White House on Monday. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Catch my podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm. This is a ridiculous deception that's been foisted on the American public because in addition to none of the 10,000 pardons offered releasing anyone from federal custody, he's also been slow to deliver on the expungements offered, which themselves have narrow stipulations. So this actually has limited effect. We already knew that the October 6th proclamation only applied to U.S. citizens, which is curious, of legal or permanent residents convicted of simple marijuana possession. But of the 10,000 pardons offered, that's only a small percentage of the overall individuals incarcerated because most of those happen at the state level. Additionally, there are more than 3,000 current federal prisoners whose cannabis-related sentences were completely unaffected by President Joe Biden's mass pardon for low-level marijuana offenders. People like Edwin Rubis, who served more than two decades of a 40-year federal prison sentence for participating in a marijuana distribution operation. Now, taking into account the good time credit, he's still not scheduled for release until August of 2032. Now, for those of you whom limited government and low taxation are core issues, this should perk up your ears, because some estimates say that ending federal marijuana prohibition, a step which Biden has so far steadfastly refused, would reduce the federal prison population by more than 2,800 people over 5 years, which would be an incredible reduction in federal expenses and a step in the right direction. This was also noted by 16 drug policy reform groups in an October 10th letter to Joe Biden, which stated, "Your recent executive order, while a great first step, did nothing to address the thousands of federal cannabis prisoners currently incarcerated in federal prison. While your recent executive order will help many, it will not release a single one of the nearly 2,800 federal cannabis prisoners. 18 states and the District of Columbia have already legalized cannabis. There are thousands of Americans who are serving long-term prison sentences, including some life sentences in federal facilities for conduct involving amounts of cannabis that are far less than what dispensaries routinely handle on a daily basis." That's an important point to note. While there are individuals languishing in prison for dealing hundreds of pounds of cannabis, there are dispensaries currently in operation, hundreds across the more than a dozen states which have legalized marijuana, dealing in thousands of pounds. So it makes no sense to allow these individuals to continue to languish in prison. And the moral logic of Biden's distinction between simple possession and other marijuana offenses is kind of puzzling. He says that marijuana use should not be treated as a crime, but he's willing to let individuals like Edwin Rubis, that we mentioned at the start of the segment, languish in prison for merely helping people use marijuana, which is recognized as a legitimate business in many states and is currently generating millions of dollars of tax revenue. Also compounding the puzzling logic, last April he announced 75 commutations for federal drug offenders, and beneficiaries included 8 people which were convicted of marijuana offenses, sometimes dealing in hundreds of pounds. Thanks to Reason.com for doing the legwork on researching the beneficiaries for their article drawing light to this issue. Those included Jose Luis Colunga, who received a 20-year sentence in 2010 for conspiracy to distribute and possession with intent to distribute 1,000 kilograms or more of marijuana, and Colunga will now be released next October. Also, Fermin Serna, who received a 20-year sentence in 2007 for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute more than 1,000 kilograms of marijuana. Thanks to Biden's commutation, Serna was released in August. Stacey Demers received a 10-year sentence in 2016 for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute marijuana and for aiding and abetting possession with intent to distribute marijuana. Confusing, I know. Demers is now scheduled to be released next April. Carrie Lee received a 10-year sentence in 2016 for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute 1,000 or more marijuana plants, and Lee is now scheduled to be released next April. Also, Kwang Nguyen received a 10-year sentence in 2017 for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute 1,000 or more marijuana plants. Nguyen is now scheduled to be released next April as well. Next, Ramila K. Brown received a 12-year sentence in 2015 for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute 5 kilograms or more of cocaine and less than 50 kilograms of marijuana. Biden's commutation means that Brown will be released next April. Christopher Gunter received a 20-year sentence in 2008 for various drug offenses, including conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute more than 100 kilograms of marijuana. Thanks to Biden's commutation, Gunter was released in August. Finally, rounding out the list, Paul A. Lupercio received a 20-year sentence in 2008 for conspiracy to distribute 1,000 kilograms or more of marijuana and 5 kilograms or more of cocaine. Thanks to Biden's commutation, Lupercio was released in August. Unfortunately, it seems that when it comes to cannabis consumers, Biden thinks that a blanket pardon is appropriate. But when it comes to the people who supply those consumers with marijuana, he insists on individualized assessments themselves, which defy logic or reason. And unfortunately, decriminalizing marijuana would require new legislation. So until Congress acts, simple possession will remain a federal crime punishable by a fine of $1,000 or more and up to a year in jail, with thousands more residing in state prisons across the nation. And what's our illustrious executive, President Joe Biden, going to do about it? Well, considering that none of the 10,000 pardons offered actually released a single person from federal incarceration, I'm going to say that the president is content to keep on Biden his time. And so fittingly, we're turning back the clock to 1931, and we're going to end the segment by playing the unofficial theme song of the Biden administration. I don't think I've used it in quite some time. This is from the foursome, appropriately, Biden My Time.
Some fellas love to tiptoe through the tulips. Some fellas go on singing in the rain. But I'm biding my time, 'cause that's the kind of guy I'm. While other folks grow dizzy, I keep busy biding my time. Next year, something's bound to happen. This year, I'll just keep on napping. I'm biding my time, 'cause that's the kind of guy I'm. Beginning on a Monday, right through Sunday, biding my time. Chasing wayflies, how the day flies, biding my time. Stranger, so long, I'll just go long, biding, biding, biding my time.
Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. If you missed a moment of the show, catch my podcast uploaded to Saturday Night on the Circle.fireside.fm and keep your dials locked for more content to come.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
In an already contentious election year and standing opposite two of the most flawed candidates ever foisted on the public by the duopoly establishment, Libertarian candidate for Senator James Siniak wasted his golden opportunity on October 16th to treat the duopoly establishment and especially his opponent Todd Young with the same contempt that they display for their constituency on a daily basis by abusing their power and spending trillions. Of course, I'm referring to the opportunity he had on the senatorial debate stage to refer to Todd Young as Duke of Spendingburg. And although later on Fox Business, he later attempted to recover, sadly, the moment was lost. And this is illustrative of why every opportunity must be exercised in the moment to draw attention not only to yourself, but to the party at large. And if you hesitate, then you lose the momentum. So he did recover ultimately on Tuesday, October 25th, when he went on Fox Business Network to talk about the rate of inflation, which is stressing Hoosiers' pocketbooks, and finally label the senator Todd Young accurately as Duke of Spendingburg. And it went a little like this.
Potential constituents saying about inflation, do they feel underserved by both parties or they just feel hosed by Democrats?
Well, look, whatever we call it, it's a recession and Hoosiers know it. It's their wallets are feeling it. I was just talking to Allison in my home county at an event I was at, and she's like, I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and I absolutely feel the very tough decisions I have to make with my wallet right now. And this is a very real time happening and very concerning, and she believes that we're not currently being represented well in Washington, D.C. Our current incumbent, might as well call him the Duke of Spendingburg, is spending more than Bernie Sanders, and he's directly attributed to the inflation rate. So Hoosiers are looking for something different. They're looking for more responsibility in Washington, D.C., and I'm here to give them that message that we can do better for them.
And I actually also have the recording live of the reaction from the House of Rob Kendall when James Siniak dropped that line.
Our current incumbent, might as well call him the Duke of Spendingburg.
Of course, it's a great line and a great nickname, but unfortunately, the moment was wasted when you could have used that on the debate stage in front of a statewide audience to assert your superiority as a candidate and show the same contempt to the duopoly establishment that they routinely show to the voters on a regular basis, and in so doing, endear yourself to the base. Of course, there was also a disappointing line dropped on Fox Business News in which they asserted that James Siniak was actually acting as a spoiler candidate, and I resist that notion. I wish he would have pushed back a little bit more. Here was where the host said that.
Well, you actually are polling higher than a lot of these libertarian candidates that we've seen throughout the country who are also running for Senate. You're at 6%. I mean, you are definitely a spoiler at this point. Are you getting pushback from Republicans who are desperate to see their party regain control?
So I've been getting pushback from both Republicans and Democrats because people don't understand a different option. And the reality is that there's a better option. Both the Republicans and the Democrats, they look for larger government for every single solution, which automatically increases taxes. It makes more government programs and more intrusion in the individual lives. But voters are tired of that, and they're really looking for something different. They don't always know what that is, but they are open, and their eyes are definitely being open to new ideas and new perspectives.
Again, a missed opportunity to elucidate that a vote for the third party candidate is not a spoiler vote for Republicans or for Democrats, because the duopoly is not owed your allegiance or support. Unfortunately, that was yet another missed opportunity for the Siniak campaign. But had he utilized the opportunity set before him, perhaps he'd be even higher in the polls right now. And before I end the segment, I also wanted to play the humorous moment caught on live TV when Ted Cruz was heckled by absurd leftist climate extremists who even got shouted down by the hosts on The View.
In the United States, inflation has one cause and one cause only. Inflation in the United States has one cause and one cause only. And that is when the federal government spends too much money.
Okay.
We have seen trillions and trillions of dollars spent by Joe Biden and the Democrats. Just last year, the federal government took in $4 trillion in tax revenues. Most money in history we've ever taken in. The problem is we spent nearly $7 trillion, and that's what
we do cover climate here, guys.
Me.
We do cover
climate. Ladies, excuse us. Let us do our job. Let us do our job. We hear what you have to say, but you gotta go. You gotta go. You gotta let us do our job.
They weren't even protesting you.
Gotta let us do our job.
I couldn't even hear what they were protesting.
Ted Cruz was hawking his book, but can you imagine catering to such a rude and obnoxious audience on a routine basis? I guess in some respect, those ladies earned the paychecks they get. You're listening to 93 WIBC Saturday Night on The Circle. Stay tuned for more coming up next. We're running wild with the Kyle Wells, producer from Hammer and Nigel show. For a final time, here's part of the WIBC family. Don't miss it. Coming up next.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Thanks for joining the show. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, rounding off the evening for another Saturday Night on The Circle. And if you missed any of the show, catch my podcast uploaded to Saturday Night on The Circle.fireside.fm. Now, by now, you've heard the news that the laudable, longtime, and long-suffering producer of Hammer and Nigel's show, the Kyle Wells, well, he's leaving the auspices of WIBC for greener pastures in the free market abroad. And although we mourn the workplace loss of our dear friend and colleague who's been a faithful steward for 12 years of hard work at MS and WIBC, we celebrate the opportunity offered to him to grow and pursue his passion for broadcasting and building hype for his wrestling brethren. Running wild with us on a Saturday night for a final time as part of the WIBC family, he's the perennially positive producer with a heart of gold and a voice smooth as silk. He's one of the hardest working men behind the scenes. Since the Wizard of Oz telling you to pay no mind to the man behind the curtain, we're pulling back the veil and letting loose with the Kyle Wells in studio with us now, my friend.
Ethan, first and foremost, your introductions are a thing of beauty. You are a very talented man. You're a very talented person. I saw your drawing that Tony Katz erased at a night with WIBC.
Wasn't that great? I liked that bit.
A very heel-like move from Tony Katz. But yeah, man, it has been one hell of a ride working
12
here
years
at WIBC.
I've been here since 2015, and you've been here, of course, you
since
know, you've
2010.
Always, yeah, you've always been part of the station since I joined the crew, and man, you've done so much with your role here as producer, and you've really built up a persona and a following, and I appreciate that. You know, you've done a lot with the Hammer and Nigel show. I'm sure they're going to miss you.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of your favorite memories that, I mean, in the past 12 years, you've wore many different hats, you've produced many different shows, not just Hammer and Nigel. I mean, let's wind back the clock. Take us back to the beginning, my friend.
It's so wild because I started in the newsroom as an intern, and they would send me out here, Monument Circle, with a topic, and I would just be like a man on the street. So that's how I started this whole journey. And it didn't take long for them to realize this guy's got so much more talent. We don't want to just, you know, hold him back. Let's see what he can do on the producing side of things. And keep in mind, man, when I was at Ball State, I was on screen. I was on TV. I broadcasted for NewsLink Indiana and Ball State. And, you know, I was the PA announcer for the Ball State men's baseball team. So getting into radio, I had no idea what to expect. But then, like I said, 3 months in to my internship, they offered me a part-time gig as a producer, and the very first show that I produced was Garrison with Greg Garrison. So,
oh, yeah.
Todd, I love Todd. Todd Meyer has been a mentor of mine since the very beginning. He's the one that trained me.
That's where you get your high standards from.
Absolutely.
Todd is a no BS kind of producer.
No, and Todd saw potential in me at a very early stage of my broadcast radio career. And man, I tell you what, over the past 12 years, it has been one hell of a run. And one thing that I've prided myself on is to always be open-minded and take advantage of every opportunity that gets thrown your way. And Matt Hiblin, I love you. You have been one of the best bosses.
Executive producer here at WIBC. Matt is, he's so awesome, man. And he's so supportive of the entire crew. He's always, you know, on top of every, you know, all the projects and making sure that the show hosts have everything they need and that the producers are equipped to help do their jobs.
Matt is one of the most underappreciated people in this business, but I
love... Genuinely nice guy, too.
Genuinely nice. He's been there for me for the past 12 years, and he really just gave me a lot of opportunities to grow in this business. So, like, I started working with Garrison, and then they've moved me to the overnights, and then they put me on the weekends, and I would do the Home and Garden show, and then they would, you know, put me back on the morning show with Steve Simpson, and then they put me on the afternoon show with Ed Wank. This is dating me. I'm throwing out some names that people have probably forgotten worked here at WIBC.
No, I remember Ed Wank. I remember the senseless survey.
Really, really funny story. So the Super Bowl was in town. And Snoop Dogg, yes, that Snoop Dogg, we are on the fourth floor here at MS Communications. Snoop Dogg and his people, they rented out the fifth floor right above us. And you could definitely smell marijuana in this
building.
It was just wafting through the halls.
The very conservative WIBC is a comical image to conjure.
Absolutely. But man, the afternoon show with Ed Wank used to be down in what we call the fishbowl, where Hank FM is on one side. There used to be WIBC live programming on the other side. And I'll never forget this. And this is back in the days when what we would say over the air, you could hear it out on the circle. Man, have times changed. Can't do that so much nowadays with politics. But anyways, all of a sudden, I see Snoop Dogg walking out our front door, and I potted up my mic, and I told Ed Wank, Ed, oh my God, look, it's Snoop Dogg. Ed turns around. Snoop Dogg heard us.
That's fantastic.
Gives us a little head nod. You know, super cool dude. Very laid back. Very chill. You know how Snoop D-O-double-G is. And Ed Wake, without hesitation, and Snoop could hear it, Ed goes, for shizzle. And it was just so hilarious hearing Ed Wank say that, and Snoop acknowledged it. That was really cool. And man, I just tell you what, I've been so fortunate. 12 years in radio is unheard of, and I've produced every single show that WIBC has offered over the past 12 years. I've done Tony Katz. I was actually Tony Katz's first morning show producer. And then I went to the Chicks on the Right. Shout out to Mock and Daisy. And then, you know, I've been producing the mashup for the past 5 years. So thank you for tuning in late at night, hearing the highlights of the day. And then most recently, for the past 4 years, I have been the number one rated producer on the number one rated afternoon drive, Hammer and Nigel.
I feel like you hit your stride and found your home with the Hammer and Nigel family, and they really took you in as part of the crew. And I like, of course, the many little characters that you've done. Who's your favorite character? There's so many. You've done the Kool-Aid Man. You've done Joe Biden. You've done Luke Bryan.
He said Joe. True and I share pressure.
You've done Luke Bryan.
I'm Luke Bryan.
Who else?
Ethan, I tell you what. Luke Bryan's probably my favorite impression. I'm Luke Bryan.
Man, I've been so thankful and so appreciative. You know, on a show called Hammer and Nigel, they really made me a mainstay character. Yeah, there you go for all the nostalgia that you're not going to hear that moving forward, but tell you what.
We're going to miss you, man. I mean,
I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss the listeners. I'm going to miss all the amazing coworkers. And I'll tell you what, Friday, yesterday, y'all made me feel really special. And I told you this off the air. I had a roller coaster day of emotions, man. I never get cold, but I had cold chills, and I think that was just like my nerves because it finally hit me.
Yeah, that Friday was a big day, man.
That this is it, you know? So the fact that I'm here on a Saturday night as unemployed member of the radio business.
I appreciate you coming back.
Well, thank you for having me, man. I'm just surprised that I was still able to get in the building. But so,
well, my, you know, my card still works. I'll get you in. You're always welcome here.
So what's,
we can have a plus one.
What's next for me?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, where are you going?
I'm taking my talents to LeBron, very LeBron James of me. Well, this decision was a hard one. You know, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. No, I'm actually going up to Fishers, Indiana, where I will be working for a company called Static Media, and I will be a content specialist for Wrestling Inc. So,
I am so excited on a personal level for you that this is the gig that you're transitioning to, because you're basically getting to fulfill your dreams and pursue being a hype man for the industry, which is something that you've told me about endlessly off air. You've been pitching a show here at WIBC for a number of years, talking about your passion, and now you're getting to live it and be paid well to do so. And I'm super thrilled for you that you have this opportunity and that you're getting to transition, not in shame, but, you know, in stride and glory, my friend. You're hitting it out of the park.
I appreciate that. You know, Hammer said it best on the show yesterday. I am going out on my own terms, which not a lot of people get to do that in this business. So to quote Frank Sinatra, I did it my way, and I'm going out on top. I've got no regrets. I've grown a lot in this business, and thank you to all the loyal WIBC listeners. As we say in this business, the show goes on. Continue to turn your radio dial to 93 WIBC. I'm going to miss you all, but I'm really excited for this next chapter in my life working for Wrestling Inc. So subscribe to Wrestling Inc. on Snapchat. Follow Wrestling Inc. on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. It's not goodbye, Ethan. It's see you later.
And although the contrast may not be entirely fitting, it is a tradition here on the Saturday Night on the Circle show. Whenever we have a fond friend bid us farewell, we play the sad walking away music from The Incredible Hulk. Before we round things off here on a Saturday evening, Kyle, share with us some of your favorite memories from the last 4 years with Hammer and Nige. Those guys have been spectacular. Tell us your favorite memories, man.
Every day, man. Every day was an adventure working with those guys. It's really hard just to pinpoint one thing because I had the time of my life. It was one wild hell of a ride working with those guys, and I'm gonna miss them. And we all embraced yesterday, which was very nice.
They did a fantastic tribute to you, man.
Yeah, shout out to
them. Oh man, and they got you good eats. I saw you post on Facebook those wings and the cake. Everything looked delicious. Yeah. It was a great farewell.
And shout out to Allison Lemons for the "It Is Your Last Day," a nice tribute to The Office. I am a big fan of The Office, so. It's kind of like when Michael Scott left The Office. I'm moving to Colorado.
And just like when Michael Scott left The Office, we know nothing is going to be the same without you, Kyle. But we've appreciated every moment running wild with you here on WIBC. And again, I'm thrilled that this is not a loss, but a victory as you transition to greener pastures and
victory.
Get to do what you love.
Thank you, Ethan.
Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC Saturday Night on the Circle. I leave you my parting words of wisdom. As always, wherever you are, whoever you're with, whatever you're doing, remember that life is a state of mind. See you next time on Saturday Night on the Circle.